Welcome, everyone, to the second of a series of six talks on the shadow. And tonight I want to talk about the shadow within reactivity. But the real work for this series doesn't come in the lectures or your note-taking. It comes in your application of the principles to your practice. The direction for that is pointed in your homework, but it really takes an ongoing participation, even far beyond the homework, to come to a real understanding of what we're talking about, so that it will change your practice. In fact, as I mull over these topics and prepare them, I see my own practice changing. And I think there's a real beauty in looking at Dharma from different perspectives, because it jolts us out of our complacency in assuming Dharma in terms of one tone or one meaning. And I find that we can summarize the whole of the Buddha's teaching in terms of the shadow. It's not a small, minor psychological topic. It has the depth of any topic and takes us right on through the psychological, but into the emptiness as well. In fact, if we think of the five aggregate talks in relationship to what we're talking about now, basically the five aggregates talks had to do with nothing has intrinsic worth or value except what the mind gives it. And that the shadow, then, when we give something value that doesn't have value, that energy has to come from somewhere. My physics background was shaky at best, but in college I remember a law, something of which was like the sum total of all energy has to remain constant. I hope I don't get emails from irate physicists. But I think there's a psychic energy component to that law as well. Because when we fix upon something, we give it valence, we give it a charge. And that fixation can be talked about in terms of desire, right? The wanting, or fear, the not wanting. But either way, there is a charge that we give it mentally. It's not so much the desire or the fear, it's the must-have. Because that negates the alternative, you see? When you must have something, then the charge has reached a certain threshold which negates the alternative of not having. And so the negation or the alternative of not having becomes the shadow of having. With equal valence. And so you can begin to look at how the systems of energy balance each other through our desires and the corresponding fear that must arise depending upon the charge of the desire. Or views and opinions is another interesting Dharma point. You know, nothing has an intrinsic view, but we ascribe a view to a particular person, event, topic, judgment, anything. And then the view becomes solidified with judgment, and it brings forth the counter view, which mutually defines it, i.e. blue states and red states. And we might say that giving something that kind of valence, that sort of emphasis, automatically sets up, cosmically, has to, set up the equal and opposite pole from the other direction. And we just think that because we there is such righteous indignation within the view, that the rightness of it refuses to see the circumstances from which the other view arises and tries to smother the other view through even more display of energy. We're just playing with the cosmos at the moment. Suppose we looked at the human psyche as a teeter-totter, with the fulcrum, of course, in the middle. And with the acceptable characteristics of our psyche on the right-hand side and the unacceptable characteristics on the left-hand side. Now, one of the basic laws of the mind is that you can not destroy any of the energy associated or any of the characteristics associated with the teeter-totter. You can't get rid of them just by willful force and control. Nothing can be discarded or eliminated. Now, if that's true, which isn't really recognized, in fact, we choose to ignore that law and try very hard to push things off the teeter-totter entirely. But all we do is just change their placement on the teeter-totter so that they become either weighted to the positive or to the negative side. It's also interesting to see that the teeter-totter, in order for the energies to be balanced, the teeter-totter must be balanced, which means that from the psychic point of view, both sides must be taken into account. We must be willing and able to hold the negative, the disagreeing components in the same way that we hold, or at least acknowledge them. They have to be acknowledged in the same way that we put forth the will and the strength into the positive charge of it. Now, if that doesn't happen, then the teeter-totter teeters. And the law is broken. At least in theory. It also is important to remember that what we're doing here is, it's not that we have to balance the charge. We have to be fully acknowledging of both ends of the spectrum. We just have to acknowledge it. When you want something, you also have to feel the corresponding fear of not having it, the possibility of not having it. When you think of yourself in a certain light, with a certain trait, you must also see in you the exact opposite trait that is also arising within our psyche. It's not true for anyone that they only hold the positive sides of the teeter-totter. We embrace the whole of the teeter-totter along the continuum of qualities. And I think that this is why it becomes a little bit fuzzy for us, is that culturally, we think we can have it to our advantage and discard that which is disadvantageous. And by not acknowledging the balancing force, the fulcrum of the teeter-totter, we act out that negative energy in sudden and sometimes compulsive ways. It's a little bit like an alcoholic who becomes fanatical in his or her temperance, right? Or a smoker. Perhaps more commonly, or somebody who's very conservative in their their sensibilities who suddenly throws all caution to the wind. Because they're not acknowledging the counterforce from the sense of desire that must be acknowledged if the fulcrum is to stay balanced, if the teeter-totter is to stay balanced. Now, you might say that enlightenment is the balancing of the teeter-totter, is withdrawing the infusion of energy into either side. The prevailing cultural image, though, is to live as much on the right-hand side as we possibly can. In fact, if we can just extend it to the right far enough, we'll reach sainthood. And in that, then, we have the potential for disaster of the shadow, because we're not acknowledging the other force of power of the negative. St. Augustine said, when this is done, when we just move towards the positive without regard to the negative, then he says, to act is to sin, and to create is to destroy in the same moment. I know sometimes I come back from a retreat in which there has been a wonderful emergence of warmth and affection and caring in myself that just arises in the interaction with people. It becomes extremely enticing even to someone who has been teaching for a number of years that I have. And I have found that if I have any sense of wanting that to maintain itself when I return home, then I become extraordinarily annoyed and irritated when that isn't there, when the opposite arises. You can see the charge of these things carrying themselves across the teeter-totter in every form and every expression of our life. And something I've spoken about before is people who get into the samadhi jhanas, these absorption states in meditation, and they are such enticing qualities of mind that people enter. But when they come out full of irritation and anger, and because the need to perpetuate those states don't last, and the opposite side of the teeter-totter has to be faced, and with exactly the same charge in which they've pushed forth their need to have the enticing qualities. A cue is to look for resentment in yourself, to be aware of resentment. If we have an idea of service, for instance, if we have an idea of helping others, and we get a late night call that asks for that help, and we're going to miss the sleep that is needed for an important next day meeting, but because we are good people, we go out and do the service of taking the person wherever their need may be, to the hospital or whatever it might be, and we don't notice the resentment of the opposite in the moment we accept the invitation towards service, then that resentment smolders and cultivates itself in exactly the same way that the charge of the image, which is held on to and infused with that sense of service and doing good and all of the spiritual qualities, but the resentment is exactly the same. And we go along with this resentment, never honoring it, as part of the mind's equivocation, as part of the mind's balancing the energy. It has to be balanced. If we lean to the left, then there's going to be a corresponding push to the right. And we think it's us. You know, we think that really the positive side of the teeter-totter is where the spiritual journey lies, and if I had it together, I would just be kind and generous and good and helpful and friendly, and I just would be the perfect Boy Scout or Girl Scout in life. But that's not the way this system works. Equal honoring of both ends of the spectrum. That's tremendously difficult to do, especially for people who inherently want to do good, which most of us in this room do, if not all. And yet, it's not about us. It's about the charge we place upon our life and our activities and the image we certify in that activity. When we reach out, when we give something credibility, when we validate it with our attention, with our neediness, with our wanting, then the energy has to come in. The opposite energy has to come in for that. In terms of image, in terms of desire, in terms of need, in terms of fear, it will come in. It's not you being bad. It's the energies of the universe balancing themselves. Take the you out of the equation, which is what we have been trying to do every session we meet. Because if it becomes about you, then it becomes about trying harder to induce the image that you want, despite this hideous part of myself that keeps robbing me of that perfection, that ideal that I'm attending to. And we become defeated in our efforts. We have to become defeated in our efforts. The law doesn't change just because you want to be good. In fact, it'll come at you because you want to be good. Now, I say this with a great deal of gentleness, but we are not in the field of trying to be good. That's not what this journey is about. I was watching a short movie on Beethoven, and you know, the delight of creativity was coming out of him when he was conducting or writing his music, and then the lash of his anger would an equal charge would come out with his interpersonal relationships. And if we're artists, the only thing that matters is our art and our creativity. And then what happens to the mundane when we come out of the esoteric? You know, the lash of our response, of the shadow, must strike it. You see, it's not our fault. Let us get that down. It's just energy systems. The devil and God stand side by side. Equal weight. And to think of that for a minute, much of our shadow is embedded both in what we think of as being evil in ourselves, but also in terms of what we think of as being good. The holy parts. Think of the word God. Just think of it. Just let it sit in your mind for a minute. What qualities come up, arise in that world, in that word? And then look at your qualities and respect to that. The gap between God's qualities and your own is the shadow of your own perfection. Think of the word kindness, for instance. Very few of us, we do kind acts all day long, but very few of us think of ourselves as being kind. We won't allow that definition to come in because inside is such a strong personal image of inadequacy and insufficiency, that the golden, noble qualities of us remain a shadow externalized and projected onto a God. This is just the universe balancing energies. How then do we work with it? Deny nothing. Assume no identity with any energy. Give no energy, charge, or valence. And then the fulcrum and the teeter-totter become balanced. But most of us use a piecemeal approach to our spirituality. And a piecemeal approach is just adding things on. Oh, I need some more of that, and I need that. Especially this next series of talks that I'm going to do on the seven factors of enlightenment. Look out, shadow. But I will, that's why I bracket that series with this one. Carl Jung said, I would rather be whole than good. I would rather be whole than good. Another a spiritual teacher also mentioned one time in a talk, he said, the love of God and the fear of God are the same thing. Do you see? When there's no identification with the rightness of one and the wrongness of the other, then we can begin to get a sense of the truth of life as the five aggregates spoke of them. That nothing is inherently or intrinsically has worth at all or charge, except what the mind gives it. The mind is the energy encoder. So I developed this little scale, and for the tape, I'll just describe it. On the right-hand side, I have a plus four or five numbers. And on the left-hand side of this sheet, I have the same continuum with negative numbers. And here I have the persona, or what we accept and love about ourselves. And on the other side, I have the shadow, what we dislike and try to negate about ourselves. And on the same sheet are what the Buddhists call, what Buddhism, they call the eight worldly values. Profit, loss, success, failure, praise, blame, pleasure, pain. Now, we have to understand that whatever we want from this side, when we don't have it, we're going to suffer in exactly that proportion on this side. Right? Because you don't get away with anything, remember. So if you want profit, success, praise, and pleasure, is there anyone here who would take themselves off that scale? When you don't have it and you want it at a 0.4 level of charge, so they're way at the end here of how much we want profit, success, praise, or pleasure, then the inevitable vicissitudes of life will at some point force us into the opposite arrangement. You'll have loss, failure, blame, and pain. It has to happen. It has to occur in your life. And perhaps the first 30 years is full of births and health and profitability and success. But you won't die with that. In fact, the very act of dying is the balancing of the equation, because everything has to be released. everything has to be let go of. And if you had wanted them so desperately and formed the image around them, in that moment of death, the pain of not having them is going to be exactly proportional to your degree of wanting. That's the balance. And these things fluctuate all the time. No one's always profitable, always successful, always praiseworthy, and forever bathing in pleasure. So the shadow looms. To act is to destroy. In fact, in the Hindu tradition, they have Brahman, the god of the creator, balanced with, on the other side of the equation, with Shiva, the god of the destroyer. And in the middle sits Vishnu, who holds both ends of the spectrum. See, the Hindus understood the balancing of energy. So let's look at the shadow and reactivity. We've already been studying that. When we see that when we want something, to that degree we're going to suffer when we don't have it. Or when we fear something, to that degree of delight we'll have if we don't get the feared object. But we can also look at it in terms of our love, our attention. Let us say that a complete or total relationship is one in which there is total attention, total embrace, total acceptance, allowance. When we're totally present with something, we're giving something our total love. But mostly relationships in general are met with some degree of expectation. And so the expectation holds the shadow and keeps the form and full-hearted connection from occurring. Part of the love, part of the attention is on the person. Part of the attention is on the expectation of what I would like from this person. And that's like a hole in which the energy is drained from total love into something that can't offer love, which is an idea or an expectation about somebody. So the degree that we want something from somebody, to that degree we are going to be unable to love them. Isn't that interesting? And we wonder where our love goes. We wonder what happens. This deflection away from actuality, away from reality, is the shadow. Energetically, what happens is I pull the plug on reality through my wanting, my desire, and my desire becomes the reality. And so the reality that is there produces its counterpoint, which is the shadow of my expectation. That severance of energy, severance away from here and now, towards the thought of what could be, is how the shadow is created. So where there is reactivity, that is the shadow. Where we are reacting, where we're upset, disappointed, despairing, anxious, fearful. The energy has been drained from reality towards expectation. Out of full-hearted participation into the lingering contamination of judgment and criticism. So what all Dharma attempts to do is to address something fully, thoroughly, to have it thoroughly addressed. Total presence, so that no shadow can be created from the drain of the mind in its opposite direction. You see, it has a counterpart. I think in South Africa they had a truth and reconciliation meetings about all the horrible and torturous events that people did. Well, they could come to this truth and reconciliation and confess them, and in that confession they would be absolved of ever having to be punished for them. And people said, what's the point of that? Well, there's tremendous point of that. Because that which is not fully confronted, fully addressed, fully allowed, fully opened to, will contain the shadow of its opposite energy. Therein lies unforgiveness. Or if we know something but pretend, you know how you can pretend? I'm just pretending. Pretending that I don't know it. Or denying, or any of the mental defense mechanisms really are shadow creations. Rationalizing. You can feel it. I mean, we're coming up to tax time. I read somewhere where the majority of people cheat on their taxes. And that weight of knowing that, you can see where ethics comes in here. Not the ethics to be good, but the ethics towards the honesty of knowing what I'm doing to myself. The ethics of full participation. I can see it sometimes when people come in and pass the Donna baskets. We receive about half the money that we would normally expect in the Donna, because about half of the people, you all, don't pay, don't offer anything. Now, there's a shadow there. There's a shadow there. You see, you can't feel relaxed because the shadow's energy of not being fully responsible plays forth in the field of our psyche. It has to. And we think we're getting away with it. We're not getting away with anything. And you can feel the unbalance of that energy when we move away from generosity, when we're just being given, 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 but we never give back. There is that sense of it just doesn't settle well. So we are held captive to what we cannot accept in ourselves. We are held captive to what we cannot release and allow in ourselves. Think and look at your own inward psychological traits. What can't you accept in yourself? Where is there the resistance, the shifting, the hand-wringing, the anxiety, the fear over some aspect of yourself? And therein, in that angst, in that fear, lies the terror of the shadow. We may have learned how to be nice. Like one friend of mine who, back in the days when they had candy stripers in the hospital settings, she got so tired of smiling and just being sweet all the time that she said at one point she ran out of the hospital screaming and ripping off her candy stripe. That need to be liked, that need to be nice. We're looking at these things. We're throwing them open. Not because we're cleaning house, but rather because we want to have a full house, to embrace the house fully, to look at all those energies with the same degree of full participation. The Vishnu of the fulcrum weighted against the Brahman of creation and the Shiva of destruction. Because what we want to come to is space and objectivity, of being able to see clearly what's in front of us. And if there is a lingering valence or charge to some aspect of ourselves, that will distort the camera lens. That will keep us from seeing reality as it is. And it will keep us sighted and distorted and crippled in our spiritual practice. So, now that we're on to the shadow, how do we work with it? Do I react to the shadow when it arises? Obviously not. Because to react to the shadow is just to create the same tension in another form. Nothing can be, we can't get out of anything here. Do I feel entrapped by my shadow and I'm desperate to escape? Then we're feeling, then we invite that fleeing energy into the shadow's makeup itself. In fact, the mind and its counter jab at the shadow is useless here. The mind is essentially useless in this effort. But there is a component of us that has the right balance. And that's awareness. Awareness adds no weight to either side of the fulcrum. As long as the awareness is bare, clean, clean attention. Judge it, and you're going in with the charge of the shadow, in which that charge isn't even being seen or acknowledged. If you are judging, then we can be aware of that, and then we create the equilibrium again. It's not to eliminate judging, it's to be aware of the judgment. The awareness ultimately leads to the balancing of the issue. Trying to eliminate something does nothing but tip the teeter-totter in the opposite direction. So essentially what we do in this practice is nothing, which is everything. Which is everything. If it were just nothing, then we would all be hopeless. But that nothing is the invitation to everything. Just see. And because awareness is fundamental, more primal than the qualities of mind that move through it, essentially awareness can see everything. If we're willing to release the shadow's need to to distort awareness and to judge what we are seeing through awareness, if we're willing to pick that up, then we scrape the barrel very clean. There's no residue back there. Because awareness is more primary than the judgment. It can see the judgment. The judgment can't see the awareness, but the awareness can see the judgment. And therefore, every time we are aware, the equation is settled. The energy systems are in balance. Nothing is aggravated or added to the teeter-totter. I can't turn away. I can't escape. There's no elimination. There's nothing I can do to the psychic energy to make it what I really want it to be, which is in the positive and right-hand side of the teeter-totter. We would all love that. It just can't happen. It just doesn't work. And so it has to throw us back not on our wanting, which is our sense of trying to be good and holy and sacred, but on something that's even more fundamentally a part of us than that. That which knows what we're trying to do. That which sees our leaning. That which holds the energy. That which understands. Through the seeing, it understands. Because it has attended, and understanding is a byproduct of attention. And so the quieter and more we see, the more we understand, the more we release ourselves into the scene and away from the need to jar and push the teeter-totter in any particular direction. Because we see it. We see what's happening when we do that. We see the implications of that sort of manipulation. And so seeing leads to more seeing and more release. And from this seeing, which is basically connected seeing, it doesn't see differentiation because that's the shadow. That's valence, that's the charge, that's validating something. Seeing doesn't validate. And so things come back to their original nature through the seeing. And therefore no longer hold the charge of desire or fear. And in that wholeness of seeing, there is basic goodness, fundamental goodness, which is the actions from seeing in totality, seeing in wholeness, not in fractured parts, not this versus that. And that's a different dimension than on which the shadow plays, because now the shadow is being seen and being held within the wholeness of that sight. And not being related to or identified with, and therefore not playing out the evil components of its depicted character, nor is the persona being grasped and indulged in, and therefore playing out the endless niceness cycles that many of us, or the sacred journey. Everything is seen just for what it is. And then there is movement from a different dimension, not a dimension of heaven and hell. May we all know that dimension. Can we sit for a minute or two? So we'll open it to any questions or comments that you might have. These talks are meant to shake us a little. They're going to everything that you thought was so spiritual, you're going to have to throw in the bonfire. Or keep it, but just know what you're doing. So we're not trying to have you force yourself to give up anything. That would just be more of the same. Just know what you're doing. That's all. Yes. The what?
You know, the perception of being attacked.
The perception of being attacked.
Yes, by from another person to you, so, or another country, or whatever you want to say.
Right.
The perception of being attacked and the fear that comes from that and the inability to see because of that fear.
So the perception of being attacked, the fear that comes from that, and the inability to see, we're not inherently unable to see. We just choose to side with the fear. When you're being attacked, you can know that the fear is arising. Again, it's not so much that these states of desire and fear don't arise. They arise. It's the mandate we give the desire and fear. It's the degree of valence. It's the degree of charge that we give that this should not be happening. This must not happen. That's what creates the shadow, the charge. The fear can be just, you know, you don't have to grab a hold of it. It can just be the arising and the movement and the passing of a particular display of mind. But if you embed yourself in the energy of fear, giving it the sum total of your attention, then you're going to bring about that attack in one form or another. I just believe that the energies of the universe, although may not be perceptibly so, but I think our opinions, you know, during the election, the amount of charge we gave this election created the enormous division inside. It created the opposite force. They mutually defined each other. But so much opinion, so much worry. And what would he have on the opposite side? Exactly the same. Met lockstep with lockstep. And we think, well, we'll turn out more in the polls. They turned out just as much in the polls because the energy was equally divided. This isn't, we don't get out of this kind of thing. We have to be willing to put it down now. That it's served its use, if there ever was one, perhaps in the Serengeti Plains or wherever we were when we were more primary, primitive. It doesn't mean you don't get out of the way of an attack. You just... It's how you get out of the way of the attack. It's what the mind does when it gets out of the way of attack. In fact, clarity will get you out of the way of attack much quicker than revving up our endocrine system. Because you see it. Yes. Krista. Yes.
Not from the place of lack of not being good enough,
right,
not doing enough, but
right,
from a more dharmically enlightened
sense. Yes. Talk about service, not from a sense of lacking, but a sense of dharma, a more dharma balanced point. It comes from a point of equality, not from need. We have to be very careful because often service is our need to help and to be to be seen as the helper. It's an identity crisis, really, for us. So we need the helper in directly proportion to them needing us. See, you see that? And therefore, because the world that needs help is much bigger than our ability to maintain the energy to help, we'll be burned out from that particular place. But if you see it from equality, not from pity, not looking down on a slope, but letting your heart engage and then including yourself equally within who you're serving, that's a huge point, because you monitor your own reserves as you serve so that you don't expend the capital that's needed to pace yourself long term if needed. But if you don't, if you're thinking about it in terms of them needing me, which is really I needing them to need me, then you're not going to take yourself into account. You're going to put yourself down. Your needs will be lesser than. It just won't be, if you take your needs into account, it won't be the noble, sacred server that you have intoned yourself to be, you see. Well, that's just hogwash. And it also, service also, feeds you in direct proportion to you feeding the world. For instance, when I was in hospice care, I didn't get involved with it with noble intentions of saving the dying. I got in there to feed myself. I wanted to understand dying. I wanted to understand death. And because the need to understand the issue was so great in me, I brought the attention to bear upon the person who held the issue. And that served them. But I wasn't trying to keep the person from dying. That was senseless. Nor was I fighting against the fact that they were dying. You see? And so you should be getting something out of the service in terms of your learning, or we are misjudging where we need to place our attention. It should be you see, the balance of energy when it's done correctly on a plane of equality feeds both parties equally, which is the conservation of the whole energy. The psychic energy thing, I think, is extremely important. It's very interesting to see that nothing gets wasted here. You know, that both sides are going to come into play. That's the nature of it. That's how it works. And we just keep assuming the sense of I in relationship to one part of that continuum. You see, and as soon as we do that, by definition, we have created the not I. And the not I is directly proportional to the I, the weight of the I. Because in the truth of things, there is not an I. So if we put an artificial boundary up, we've got an artificial division. Of course they have to be equally matched. This isn't about separate billiard balls. We're interconnected in a way in which the conservation of energy is a law, the law of the land, also in service. So you should be getting fed equal to your willingness to feed. Yes, Dwari. The issue of the shadow and the issue of karma, she says, seem very much related. They're the same. They're just different ways of looking at the same thing. Right. What goes around comes around. We all know that it works. The way I like to think of karma is not so much what happens to us, but what we bring to the situation is our past conditioning, the past charge that we have learned to give to something, and the arguments, the endless arguments we offer a situation, and the amount of contracted energy around something, or expanded energy, depending upon what the particular event is. And then at any particular time, we have the ability to end the karma, which is to balance the energy, by noticing those reactions. When we don't, where we are no longer feeding the reactivity, we are essentially balancing the scale. That may play out because of the charge that we have given it in the past. The heap of it may be large, and so the conditioning may continue to come forth, but we're adding nothing new to it. As long as we're willing to relax, observe, and allow that conditioning to be what it is. And very quickly it starts alleviating itself. It's not like 10,000 lifetimes. It's very quick. Very quick. It discharges itself very quickly. Yes.
Via negativa, and I don't have a dictionary that is sophisticated enough to have via negativa in it. What we're talking about here, is that via negativa?
I have no idea what via negativa is. Okay. Negative life? I don't know. What is it? Does anyone know?
Negative path, negative way.
Negative way? I just don't know it.
Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not familiar with that term. The path of suffering. You have to be more of a scholar than I am. Yes. 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 Right. Right. Right.
I guess, isn't that thought shadow enough?
Enough for what?
Sometimes the way I kind of think about that is that, okay, I've got this kind deed, and then I've got this kind of debasing thinking in relation to that. It's not as good as. So is that enough?
I don't quite understand what you mean by enough. You're saying you have a shadow, you have a kind deed, and then you have the shadow effect of the kind deed.
The thought.
The thought.
Not necessarily the shadow. I'm wondering if the thought itself is the shadow.
No. The thought is the symptom of the shadow.
Okay.
The shadow is the feeling of inadequacy that you're trying to get over by being kind. Do you see that? You have to hold the sense of self-betrayal, the unkindness, the sense of you, the belief in you, of being inadequate or unkind or whatever, which gives rise to the impulse, right? And gives rise to the thought about that impulse. Because kindness is not an act of image making. It's a natural response of the heart when you see things are more together than you have assumed them to be. You just are kind. Basic warmth. If there's an image associated with it, there's an attempt to counterbalance some belief that doesn't hold that image. That's what needs to be seen. It's a belief of self, a belief in you, of something secret in you that you don't want anyone to know, most importantly, yourself. to actually admit. But you can see the symptomology all along the way. Trying to be nice, trying to be kind, trying to be good. With the terror of the idea or the assertion that you're not those things and not worthy of. You see how they balance? And so your acts of kindness and the valence of them and the charge you give them and your need for them is in direct proportion to the sense of unworthiness you have that harbors, that is in safe harbor here, that keeps that being fed. No. Not all acts of kindness are acts of shadow. If they come from the heart, they can come from clarity, they can come from awareness, then they're natural. They feel organic. They don't feel like you're being pretentious. They don't feel like you're grabbing at something. They don't feel like you're being good. They're just natural, authentic movements into life. But from anyone's standpoint, that was a very kind thing you just did. Do you see? Yes.
Well, I have a question. You spoke to someone had a question about service. What about raising children? You know, that's if you're dedicated to it, it's very demanding at times, and it's not necessarily easy to kind of take care of yourself in the moment. And you know, there's demands.
Question is about raising children and the demands, and you know, I know nothing about raising children. So I can't really answer that, and I'm not being evasive. I really don't know that. But I do know that the shadow constantly attempts to reproduce itself in our offspring and with each other. What we want more than anything is to hand that shadow over to the other person so that they hold their image, or they hold they obey the directives of the persona, of the sense of what is right and respected and the thing to do. And so we teach people not to do certain things and to do others. And so we educate them on how to hold a shadow. Now, beyond that, in parenthood, I just can't imagine what it's like, literally, because I just never have done it. And I have tremendous respect in that, and we have a parents group that has the understanding of what that means at the heart of its discussions. Okay, good. Thank you all very much. Thank you.